my gosh, I'm sorry. Sorry. I didn't forget. I was just in a meeting with another FDA. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. You would have loved my conversation.
I mean, tell me.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, all the stuff that we've been talking about and doing over the last several months about, you know, the consistency and demanding quality and continuing on providing for our clients in order to gather assets and stuff. That was the conversation. So, all good.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, you had a bunch of things that you had going on
yes.
that were going to happen in June. What happened? Tell me all about it.
Yeah, still things going on and still building on those things. So, and lots of your advice has come into play in the last couple of weeks. So I have the client that I was expecting to come in pretty much based on that recommendation that he gift low-cost basis stock and so on and so forth and some of the other things, that the signatures are in. We just need to pay off his liquidity access line, and then we can start actually submitting the ACAPs. So that's, I think, 3.2 in an asset. I started with those New York clients. I was in New York last week, and I met with, you know, most of my bigger relationships. Did a lot of what you said, just talking markets and ideas and that sort of thing. With one of them, I asked Joe Friedman to come on board because he's a fixed income guru and really, really knows his stuff inside and out and always has great ideas. And I thought, you know, this client is a guy who loves to hear a great idea and doesn't have enough exposure to fixed income. So I had them speak before I went to New York, and, of course, the client was impressed. And then when I was in New York, he wanted a proposal for some reallocation of his assets. He had $35 million, I think I told you, at UBS and $5 million with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do constantly remind him that he can't have the allocation strategy with all the individual money managers people like to have and I'd like for him to have, because I don't have enough money here to do that. But we discussed a couple of little changes and talked a lot about macro market stuff, and he wants IPOs, so we'll put in for IPOs for him. That's fine, you know, not a big deal. But then I talked with him about, we were establishing an account where Joe would call him with ideas, and Joe and I share 50-50 on anything we do together. And anything that Joe would do would be in that account. And he said, well, how are you going to fund that account? And I said, well, I'd like for you to bring me $30 million from UBS. And so his response was, everybody wants me to give them my money. And I said, yes, I'm sure that's true. And he said, let me tell you, I have my UBS team, which was a team that I had, but he went into that whole thing. I've known him since before that, so I don't know how he got his UBS team, but he told me a whole different story. I have my team in Europe, and they do all my European stuff in Russia and so forth and whatever. Okay, that's right. And then I have you. And I was waiting for my description. I was like, okay, who am I? And he said, he was very disheartened with Smith Barney, because the team he originally had with his assets with it, Smith Barney, had put him in a private equity deal that went bad. Now, Smith Barney made good on it, but the team left the firm in the middle of the process of Smith Barney making good on it. So the account came to me because he had already moved it all to Goldman Sachs, except for the private equity. So I had just the private, and I knew him because I would when that team was here, I managed their PDM. So I knew him, and that's why I got the account, because I had, my name was on it. So account comes to me, But it only is private equity. And now here I am going to New York and meeting and financial crisis the day before Thanksgiving, 2008. So it was quite a time. So he had, I would say, like $2 million in private equity here.
Yeah.
And so met with him, you know, he's very upset but he's now been told that they're going to make good, they're going to credit him for what he lost. I think it was $600,000. And so that was fine, but you know, he was already upset. He was upset with the team. He was upset with the fact that Smith Barney kind of allowed this to happen. So he was at Goldman. And then Goldman told him that without $50 million, he couldn't have the service level he wanted. So then he met the team from UBS. I was trying for it, but he just was not even willing to come back to Smith Barney at that time. So then, now we've been working together ever since. He has a daughter who's about 10 years younger than me. I get along very well with her. His wife likes me. The guy that is his advisor likes me, and you know, so on and so forth. So I'm waiting for him to tell me why he stays with me, because I know why they tell me. And he said, you know, he started to say this whole thing, I feel devoted to you, I've worked with you for a long time, I've known you for a long time. And then he said, and you've proven me wrong on many occasions, and I can't forget that.
Ooh,
and I was like, because two Junes ago, he wanted to short the market with his entire portfolio.
Wow.
I had lunch with him for 3 hours and talked him out of it. He ended up shorting $50,000 in the S&P, and he lost a lot of money. So that's one time, but there are a couple of different times, but that's probably the one that stands out to me the most. You know, because he loves the idea of taking big risk and making big returns because he's an entrepreneur. He came from Russia with zero. He started a shipping company, and he's, you know, worth almost $100 million now. He's had a couple of deals that he was going to, one in particular where he was going to go and invest in this project in Tampa, and his advisor, who's retired, called me and said, please, 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 can you talk to him? And I called a couple people I knew in Tampa who were in the development business. Turned out this guy was a complete sham, like notorious sham in the area. So I got enough information for him to talk him out of that deal. And that would have been like a $3 million deal.
Wow.
So he remembers these things. Thank goodness. So now we are in a situation with him where I've asked him for $3 million. He said we'll start with $500,000. Joe has already put him in a couple of bonds. And he called me today, you know, putting in for all these IPOs. And it's a shifted relationship. Because he asked me, is there anybody on your team that really can dive deep into this IPO situation once the stocks come in? I'd like to have somebody on your team that I can... So this is what he's always wanted, is a team.
Yeah.
So now that Joe's involved, now he sees me as a... Oh, and then he said, can Janet send me... You know, so it's been very... Like, this just, I think, opens the possibilities for me with him. So that's very good. So I will ask for the $3 million again. He said he wants to just see how Joe does and see what we're going to do and so forth. So, you know, I'll ask for more. So that's that one. I had somebody call in from one of my advertisements. Said he was tired of looking at my advertisement every month and said he finally was going to call me. Seventy-seven-year-old developer originally from New York, $7.5 million in the bank. He liquidated during the financial crisis in a panic and hasn't had the nerve to get back in the market since, but wants to make some yields. So again, I brought Joe in because it's a fixed income situation. Oh. The gentleman wants to talk about the details of it, you know, and I really don't want to get into that. I don't want to learn that aspect. I really just don't. So, Joe met with him. We've been speaking with him. We're still working. We've set up for the close. He wants to come in potentially next week and open an account and start with $3.5 million. So hopefully not. Great. I usually hate talking about these things when they're so early on, you know.
I always told my FAs, I said, listen guys, we'll speak about it, but we'll really talk about it when the check clears, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I always feel that it is a jinx when you start talking about it too much or getting excited about it or, you know, feeling like you've accomplished it and it's not really there. So I agree. And then I met with a referral in New York. This was like $1.5 million relationship. You know, basically emailed her after the meeting because she said she needed more time to think. And I've gone through all the phases and I just said, we're here when you're ready. Otherwise, good luck. No, but pretty much. I mean, I just, you know, I know, I told her to her face. I said, I know what we do. I've demonstrated to you what my capabilities are, and you know, I hope that you'll feel confident and work with us. But if not, I understand. Because at that point, I was just like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore with her. She's too wishy-washy, and that can be dangerous.
So what was her reaction to that?
Oh no no, you know. Oh no no no, I'm very interested, you know. I want to travel with my daughter this summer, and I'm going to travel with my daughter and my mom. You know, I just put her in the home, and I said, okay, well, when you can fully commit to making a decision and taking the steps, let me know. And, you know.
Yeah.
We started to talk about fees, and I said, look, you know, If you believe you're not paying these fees already, I can show you that you're paying more. But it's not really about that. It's about what you're getting in return net of fees and what you're getting from your advisor. I've shown you that I do financial planning. We have so many more capabilities than the places where you are now. And so I think net, the fees are worth it. But you have to decide that. So that was, you know, it's annoying, but it's one of those things where sometimes I think, well, I dodged the bullet, you know.
Well, you know what I like? I like your strength.
Me too.
I like your strength.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm proud of you.
It's making a huge, huge difference. I mean, because I've known the client that I said I want you to bring $3 million. I've known him for never flat out asked him for money. I've always been wishy-washy. Well, you know, I'd love to work more with you and do more. You know, like, really? Like, this is a Russian dude. Like, he... Yes, he likes that. I, you know, he likes that I'm not ugly. You know, I know that about him. Like, that's just... But I also think that he responds better when he knows I'm in charge of what I'm doing for him. And so But I didn't recognize that until this year.
People like strong people. They like confident people. They want to be around confident people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be around people they can push around. They got plenty of those. They can hire those all day long.
Yeah, especially these clients, right? Yeah, exactly. That's right. I mean, the prospect, I called him yesterday and I said, I understand that you are going to come in here and you know, open an account and bring money And he said, well, you know, I've got to be completely 100% comfortable with that. I really like meeting you and Joe, and he's been showing me some great ideas, and I like what you do, and, you know, this whole thing. And he's like, but, you know, I don't know. I guess I just need something that tells me that it's time. And I said, well, I will never be one to tell you anything to do with timing. It doesn't work. I said, you just have to make the decision. You have to just bring us the money. Whether or not we put it to work right away doesn't matter. But we just establish the relationship. And he was like, I like that you said that. And I said, well, you just have to do it. You just have to drive here and find the papers. I'm not driving there. What he said was, I am there, right? Because I used to be like, I'll be right over. Then you get there and you're like, oh, crap. You know, they're not ready.
they're gone. I'm sorry, I had to cancel, you know.
Right, I'm really like halfway there. Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, I flew to New York once with this client who showed me his $15 million bond portfolio. And I was like, yay, you know, I'm going, we're going to close the business, I got the paperwork, we're opening the accounts, I get there. And luckily I never put in here for one person, but that was the person that drove the trip. And he's like, you know, I decided I'm just going to have you manage the kids' trust. We're going to leave the muni portfolio where it is. Which really worked out for me because of what I do. But it was like, you know, it was like, $3 million.
Oh,
it's like, wow. Yeah. So, don't do that anymore.
No.
So all good. And then, so you gave me two assignments.
Nope.
One of them was the centers of influence.
Yes.
I have not been as good as I'd like to be on it, but I've been working on it for sure. What I've been doing is not only asking my clients, but asking their professionals, CPAs, attorneys, and stuff like that, that I have reason to deal with. Yeah. You know? Because it's like, well, okay, the client's going to tell you their person, maybe, or maybe not. But if you are talking to a client's attorney, then you might say, do you have any CPA? You know, so I'm asking those people too. And giving the reason why I'm asking them is really good because they want to be on my list too.
Yeah.
So that's been good. I actually have a family that has an in-house accounting group in their basement of their office. and so I was helping one today with some paperwork or something, and I asked him. And he immediately sent me some referrals. And so they're in work, of course, because they're all in New York. Yeah, so I'm going to see them next time I'm in New York.
So these are introductions to people that they know or do business with or how?
Well, yeah.
Wonderful. So you ask the CPA? That's good.
Yeah. That
sounds like a Bernie Madoff thing, a CPA inside the building.
Well, yeah. They're a very large real estate family with multiple generations in the business. And I've been managing two of the relatives, and about 5 years ago, the dad said, what in the world am I doing paying Al at Joe Schmo CPA firm when I have, you know, when I look at how much I'm paying him and how much the CPA firm is taking, I could bring him and his two associates in-house and charge and pay less.
And pay them more.
And they literally are in the basement. It's the funniest thing you've ever seen.
And that's what they did. So you go see him in the basement. I remember you telling me. You go see him in the basement.
I do. I go see them. I first go up to the ivory tower on the top and visit the owners, and then I take the elevator down and I visit them in the basement. Yes. I'm going to go. My husband and I are going to the Hamptons in 2 weeks, and we're going to go to some of the homes of the owners. And, you know, it's going to be, I know it's very impressive.
Yeah, you have not been there, then. So this is new.
I haven't. I sent one of them an email, and I said, call me, it's your lucky month in July. And he called me, and I said, you get to meet my husband. They've been asking. So so we're doing a little bit of a weekend tour.
That'll be a blast.
Yeah. But I've been using your line. Is there anyone that I should be meeting while I'm in town? I used it when I went to New York last time to one of my clients who's an attorney, and he sent me an invitation to his firm reopening party while I was there, which I didn't make it to, and I wrote him a nice email saying, I'm so sorry I didn't make it, you know, blah, 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 and he said, well, there was somebody here that I wanted to introduce you to, so let me know when you're in town next, and I'll buy you a cocktail and introduce the two of you. An advisor. So.
Cut it out.
But I'm glad I didn't go, because I would have gotten there late and I was so exhausted. I wouldn't have presented well.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been at your desk still. Yeah.
No. No, I was. I literally had like my, for the most part, toughest New York clients from 8:30 in the morning till 6:30 at night, including lunch. It was just, so to go to that, I was walking there, and I was like, I will just come across like no good.
Okay, so let's take a minute about that.
Okay.
All right? Because I know your life is crazy, right? But maybe you don't have to make it so crazy.
Okay.
Maybe take two days, relax, make the arrangements, take care of things, and take 2 days and see 4 people instead of 6.
I did take 2 days.
And you got to take 3 days.
I have to look, but I'm pretty sure that what happens is, I went a ride Monday and a left Thursday.
Wow.
And Janet just tries to book me with the people I've given her.
Yeah, so she kills me.
And you know, it's great, but I think that I started blocking my calendar with personal stuff. I used to have an anti-personal stuff thing on my calendar because I worked with a team when I worked with that team for 7 years where I didn't get along with the assistants, and they were very judgy about what I was doing and what, you know. It was always a secret.
Okay.
I got in that bad habit, and it's a bad habit. It's all my fault, but not. Because I didn't have the confidence to say, this is what I'm doing. Get over it.
Right.
You know? So now...
I'm playing ball. Shut up.
Exactly. So now I have been blocking my calendar as much as possible for, you know, whether it's personal things or just needing time to catch up or, you know, getting ready for a trip or whatever. So I've been better at that. So now I just need to do a little bit more of that when I travel and I have Janet booking me.
Yeah, just so Janet doesn't, I mean, my people do the same thing. They'll just kill me, you know, given the opportunity. They don't think about it. They're thinking about where am I going to fit this person in? Where am I going to fit them in? I'll put them in here.
Exactly.
You've got a half an hour here. I'm like, you've given me no time for lunch. You know, that's it. I got to work completely through lunch, grab something, and back, you know. But today I have 6 calls, right? I have six calls, which is not too many, but it's still no break. You know, start at 9 and you're done at 3. So, I mean, that's pretty good day, you know?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
But therefore, you need to build in recovery time. That's really what you want to call it. You don't need to call it private time. You don't have to call it recreational. Call it recovery time. Everything that you do that's not work-related can be considered recovery time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Golf is recovery. Working out mm-hmm. is recovery. Sleeping is recovery. Taking a nap is recovery. These are all legal. You can do these. Getting a massage is recovery. So all the things you do for yourself to take care of yourself, a manicure, a pedicure, is recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I have not been doing even that, which usually I'm I want to do that. I've been doing them in my living room at home at night.
Yeah, you got to take good care of yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you're making plenty of money. Your life is very good. Now you want some balance. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Get some
balance here. You're getting very good. You're getting very, very good at what you're doing, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you for your help.
Well, I'm only as good as a player. I mean, a coach is only as good as his players. And when my players don't execute or won't try things, I can't do a thing. You know, I can't coach to that.
That's got to be frustrating.
It happens all day long, every day. I cannot tell you the amount of procrastination that goes on in amazingly successful teams.
Mm-hmm.
They're just terrible at it. I mean, at managing it, especially when it comes to this stuff, to acquisition.
Yeah.
You said to me, you know, I didn't do everything that I wanted to do, but I did okay. No, you did great, okay? And we didn't even talk about the mastermind. But you're just from this, you've done amazing. You've done really, really well. And you've got a great, solid acquisition. And you're making personal changes. You're making life changes at the same time.
Yes, and I am finding that because of the organization, I am able to do what I'm able to do this job within the finite time period and then go and pick up my son and not feel like, oh my gosh, you know, guilt.
Right. Yeah.
And then guilt once I pick up my son that I'm not able to be with him mentally.
Right. You're still working when you pick him up. And when you're with him, and when you're at work, you're worrying about him. And when you're with him, you're worrying about work.
And even in New York, I do have to say that even though I was, 8:30 to 6, I would meet Brooks and my mother-in-law for dinner, like the first 2 nights. And it was over. You know what I mean? It was like, it wasn't like I was still on, like, oh my gosh, tomorrow. I'm not ready for tomorrow. Or, you know, because before I left, and then I went through, did our folders, everything was organized. I knew I had everything. She had the office booked for me. Everybody came to me. That was the first time I've ever gone to New York and had that many meetings where everybody came to me. What a difference.
Wow.
Yeah, what a difference. So, that's your coaching. Before I used to run all over the screen and I wait, and then, it's like when you talk to them, you're on their time. When they come to you, they're on your time. So it's like a big difference.
Right. They're going to be on time, and they're going to leave on time, and they're not going to hold you up because they're in a meeting and, you know, treat you like a salesman. It's really good. It's really huge. And then you set the bar. That's the bar. That's where we're, that's just the way we're doing it from now on. If you want me, this is the way we're going to work.
Yep.
That's very powerful. All right.
You mentioned mastermind. I have not had that. That's next week.
Okay. Good. Yep. You said June was going to be your mastermind meeting.
Yeah. We're having it next Thursday. We're having a dinner. There's only three of us at this point. There are four of us, but only three can go to this dinner.
But that's fine, though. This will be the first one, right?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Now, here, let me give you just, you know, we probably covered this, but if we didn't, mastermind groups at each meeting, you want to set the tone. You want to make sure it's structured. Everybody brings a good idea, and they bring a problem or a challenge that they're having, and then you spend the remainder of the time working on one person in the group. They sort of get in the hot seat, and they kind of give as much full disclosure as they're willing to about their business, their life, their challenges, and the things that they're facing.
Okay.
And then you're there. The other people are there to coach and help and support them.
Okay.
And then you rotate. Then you rotate it.
Okay. Great, because I'm in charge of kind of organizing the first one, so I'll tell everybody what to expect, and
right.
Then keep it pretty concise. Just dinner, topic, speak, you know, timing, speaking-wise. Okay. Yeah, I do have a lot of notes from our last conversation about it.
Yeah.
And then we did have, it's our first in-person meeting. But we had a call, so we know we're all on the same page. Very
great.
Professional group of women, and I've been following them both on Twitter and LinkedIn, and they've been very busy ladies. So
great.
Doing conferences and speaking engagements and stuff like that. So I think very good, and it'll be great to add another person. We have this other lady that I honestly have known her for a very long time. I have a feeling that she's never going to be able to make it.
Yeah, then she's maybe not the right person, you know.
Yeah, I think she was really happy to be invited, but I think that it's going to be very difficult for her to make it. She's a Tiger mom, and she runs the division for international paper that handles Latin America.
Yeah. Okay.
And she's a client of mine. So, yes. And I feel like I had a question for you, but I didn't write it down, which is very unlike me. Let me see. No, I didn't. Did I write it on the hot list? No. Mm-mm. No. Oh, well, so did you ever get to speak with Eric Hirsch?
Yes. And, no.
Okay. I went for a run with him when I was in New York, because he's in New York for the month.
Yeah, you're a good person, and you're really trying, and I don't blame you for trying, but he's not a good fit.
Okay.
I could probably try and close him, but I don't think it would be good for him or for me.
Okay.
Remember the willing. You've got to coach the willing, and he's not. He's as much on the other end of willing as I've ever talked to.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if you would reach him. No, he's a very good person.
Yeah.
He's a really great
person. No ambition.
Yeah.
Zero ambition. Yes,
well,
no ambition. But in that reason that he just wanted to miss. Yeah.
No, he doesn't. And, you know, he is a single male who has more than enough assets and has an inheritance coming to him that's significant and rents an apartment. You know, he's just, he's whittled down to having no overhead whatsoever. So there isn't, I mean, and he's, you know, he's doing what, $750,000 in revenue?
Yeah.
That he doesn't need?
Right.
So,
I mean, what's he, he's not going to spend it. And he's the guy, look, I had those guys. Not him, but I mean guys like that, as when I was a manager. And what I did was, my attitude was, love every person in your office like they are the son of your, or daughter of your best friend. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you take great care of them, but you do not put your time or energy into them unless it's a good investment. So I called it fair but not equal. Okay?
Okay. Yeah.
And so I would invest the money that I would put into him, I would then have that money to put into somebody else.
Mm. Makes sense.
Right? And that would, so I would double up on the good people.
Okay.
I would take from the ones that do, it's like a portfolio, right? Where you have one stock that's selling at, you know, what, pick your Netflix, right? It's growing at, you know, 50 times, you know, 50% a year selling at 50 times earnings. Well, you know, that's a, people have put a lot of money in that. And that, you've got a utility that's selling at 12 times earnings and it's going to earn 6% this year.
Right.
And so I take from the utility and I invest it in Netflix because I can grow my company faster that way. So I take all the money from all the utilities and that money is my time as well as my capital, as well as my capital. And I invest it in people like you to make your life better.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, I want a bigger office. And I say, you know, let's think about what you really need, not what you want. Because what you want may not do anything for your business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So let's invest the money in the right place for you. And think about what's the best. Maybe you need a coach. Maybe you need advertising. You know, maybe you need a sponsor, a charity. Maybe, so people need different things. We have a limited budget, but I've got the money that I was going to give to old Joe, and I'm going to give it to you.
Right.
Okay? Let's not build a new office for you. Let's think about how we best can spend that money. If you want that money to be in a new office after we've gone through all this, then God bless you. I will do that. But I don't want to spend your capital where it's not the best return.
Right.
It's because somebody else has a bigger square footage.
That's right.
It's really not, in the long run, that's not going to make you any more money.
Yeah.
So from a management point of view, you don't stop caring and be listening and ready if he changes. You know, he gets a girlfriend or a boyfriend, I don't know, but gets a boyfriend and decides to get married and they want to adopt a child and he wants to move to the suburbs, then God bless him, you know, life, you know, he's going to become more ambitious. He has no ambition now. But we never give up on people. We just use our time and capital where it's best used at that time.
Okay.
But I admire you for trying, and you're very nice to do that.
Well,
I had one conference call with him. It went fine, but it was like, whoa. And then the second one we were supposed to do, and he didn't show. And I kept looking at his face and that conversation, and I said, because I had made a folder for him, and I said, Rob, you're trying to sell somebody that doesn't want to get sold here.
Right.
Okay, so that's not going to be good for your morale, and it's not going to be particularly good for his morale. And so we're going to have much fun here. You know, you could probably get $8,000 out of it, but that's not what this is about.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Right. It's never been about.
Right.
Yeah. So find me the guy that's difficult in terms of selling him, but is ambitious as anything.
How about Mike Roth? Did you ever hear from Mike Roth?
Uh-uh. I don't think so.
Okay. I'm going to introduce you. Is that okay?
Yeah. That would be great.
Okay. He is the founder of the Academy for Certified Portfolio Managers.
Okay.
He's a big team. He's in the process of breaking up with his partner. And he saw him at Portfolio Management Institute, which is also something he was a founder of. And he asked how I was doing. I told him, and he said, wow, that's great. And I told him about you, and he said, oh my gosh, I'm looking for somebody to help me work through this divorce and restructuring of my business. He's in California, but he's in two offices, I think. So he has a pretty complex situation. He has a lot of assets. He's a high producer, but he's looking for guidance and focus and discipline, I think. So.
Can we do a conference call, an introductory conference call?
Sure.
That would be the best way, and then the way I teach you guys to do it, right? You put us both on the phone, and then you drop off.
Okay. All right. So I will.
Will you set that up? I know it's asking a lot, but would you set it up with Cindy?
Yep.
And then she'll take care of finding me and making sure I'm on the line. I don't want you to go to any trouble that, you know, Janet can do it with Cindy, that'd be great. You know.
Okay. All right, I'll just send him an email to see if he had any time next week. And he travels a ton, so I'm sure he'll have very specific time dates. But he's absolutely looking right now. So
he
would be a challenge.
Yeah, but he's a world-class performer, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I like, you know me, I work best with world-class achievers.
He is somebody that my husband does not like.
Because he's too big an ego?
Yeah.
Yeah, I deal with egos. I deal with that.
Yeah,
we
deal with it all the time, I'm sure. He came to our, he stayed at our house when Portfolio Management Institute was in Miami.
Yeah.
And I was on the board with him for the Academy. And he stayed at our house, and he was on a very important conference call, and my husband I wasn't home, and he needed to get in the house, and my husband was playing golf. And so he came off the golf course, you know, we live on the golf course, so came back with the cart to let him into the house.
Yeah.
They had never met. He never got off the phone.
Oh, you're
to introduce himself.
You're kidding me. I treated him like he was like he was the caddy.
Yes. And then that evening, we were supposed to go to a dinner. And I talked him into, you know, having a glass of wine with the two of us so that Craig could meet him. You know, he's staying in our house. And it was like, Craig and I sat outside by the pool drinking our glass of wine while he was inside on the phone.
Oh, my God.
Could not even. So, I mean, I have a lot of respect for him because of what he's created with his PMI and with his ACTM and, you know, and I worked with him a lot. I think he can be the biggest jerk, but he's got a big business and he's a great producer and he treats his clients well. So I'm, you know, and he cares about knowledge. So okay. I think he's a good in him, but
we'll give it a shot, but we won't.
We'll just go there.
Yeah, we won't wear ourselves out trying to get here. Okay.
No, but full disclosure, but I think he would benefit, and I think the challenge might be fun for you. I mean, you know. He sat in front of the Columbia professors. I'll never forget this. They had given an exam the third year of the program, and I was on the board with him. And like 40% of the people basically failed the exam, but because it's, you know, Ivy League, and they said, well, we do it in a sliding scale, and he sat across from these professors, and he said, no, you can't do that. Like, discouraging these people. They don't leave here feeling that they've learned the material if they leave knowing they got 40% right. We need for them to feel they learned the material right. How do we do that? And they were like, if you don't like it...
Really?
Yeah, and they said, we're not changing our ways. We are Columbia. This is the way we do things. And he worked with them, and he got it so that at least the delivery was better. You know?
Yeah, because if you're only getting 40%, material can't be that hard.
Right. So, He they didn't change their ways, but he worked with them. So that's where I say, you know, he's a challenge, and he can be a jerk, and his ego is huge, but he's willing to learn. So.
All right. Well, let's give it a shot.
All right. I'll try to get him and get you on the call. Have a great week. Thanks for all of your help.
Thank you. Congratulations. You did great. Wonderful, wonderful. Wonderful month. Ready to go.
A lot more to do. Okay. Thanks, Ron.
Bye. Bye-bye.